to approve the findings of fact, conclusions, and recommendations of the Planning Commission to the Department of Community Development regarding amendments to Interim Zoning Ordinance 566-2019 to regulate high-risk secured facilities.
I just wanted to mention that as part of your procedural requirements, typically findings of fact are not able to be approved at the same meeting as your recommendation. So there would need to be a motion made by the commission to waive that procedural requirement prior to adoption of the findings of fact.
Okay. Move to waive the requirement for non-approval of the finding of facts at the same meeting.
A second?
I'll second.
Any discussion? All those in favor signify by raising your hand really high. Opposed? Abstentions? And it passes unanimously. All right. On to the main motion.
I move that we adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law, and recommendation as proposed by the staff.
Second.
Any discussion? Amendments to the findings and conclusions?
Just to clarify, Appendix A will be...
Appendix A will be the draft code language that we just amended.
Changes.
Correct.
And then you'll also have to change the date of adoption.
Yes. Good catch, actually. So that would be something that we would need to amend, I believe.
Which you can, we can authorize you to just make that change.
Yeah.
Scriveners.
Thank you.
All right. Any other discussion on the motion? All those in favor signify by raising your hands. Opposed? Abstain? Passes 6-1. You have everything you need, Amanda, on that? All right. With that, now we'll go to the zoning use table update.
All right.
All right. So, last year into this year, the board approved some funds in the general fund for the department to take a look at alternatives to the existing zoning use table and associated footnotes in Title 17 of the Kitsap County Code. So tonight we're here to review the proposed work plan with you and also give you, a heads up that you're going to be participating with this process quite a bit in the development of the alternative or the proposed recommendations that are developed. So I'll start by just kind of walking through the scope and then focus a little bit on the process that we intend to take with this. And then I'm happy to answer any questions you have at this time related to this project. So the project scope will include, as I mentioned, updates to the zoning use table to help modernize and streamline and correct any discrepancies that may be there. And we will focus on changes to uses within urban growth areas, limited areas of more intensive rural development, and then rural commercial, rural industrial, and the mineral resource overlay zone. So I wanted to note that this project would not focus on the rural residential zones across the county. There was quite an extensive process that was done a few years ago related to rural land uses, and so the department didn't feel that that needed to be addressed at this time. We would primarily be looking at revisions to the level of permit review. This is to remove any barriers to achieve development outcomes that are consistent with the Kitsap County Comprehensive Plan. We are also looking at reorganization of over 100 footnotes that currently are associated with the zoning use table, and we're looking to reduce any surprises that may come up during the permit review process, and again, clarify those standards for certain land uses across the county. And then there will likely need to be some additional updates to various sections in the code, such as new definitions. So if we are proposing to add new land uses to the use table, those will need to be defined. And so that is within the scope of this particular project. What the this project will not do is update all of the site design and development standards. So it will not be looking at setback requirements, density allowances, height, parking requirements. This is really a first step in trying to adjust the zoning use table, and those would be addressed in later code development processes in the future. So if you want to turn to page 5 in attachment A, it kind of lays out the process that we've outlined for this project, and I'll kind of walk through the four phases to give you an overview. So starting this month, we've begun to develop outreach and engagement materials for this project. In June, we are looking to distribute a countywide survey that will help to guide the development of proposed the initial draft proposal. To create and promote awareness about the project, we will be conducting kickoff presentations to various interest groups, some of which are outlined in the work plan. And this is just to help to inform the community about this project, let them know about opportunities to participate, and really drive them to the survey that's being distributed so that we can use that information to inform the development of an initial draft, which the department will take on initially. And then moving into July, this is where the Planning Commission will play a role in this project. The department is proposing to facilitate three work-study sessions with the Planning Commission. And we've also are looking at also working with the county's hearings examiner as well to participate in drafting and refining the department's initial proposal that's developed based on that community-wide or county-wide survey. Once the Planning Commission and the hearing examiner have helped to refine that initial proposal, the department will host some community workshops to further refine that initial draft that's developed by the department and Planning Commission. And then based on that, those workshops, we will have kind of a final draft proposal that the department will analyze, and that will occur between September and October this year. So we'll prepare a staff report, do the required State Environmental Policy Act or SEPA review, and then present that to the Planning Commission and eventually the board. So consideration and kind of the more formal public process related to this project would begin in October of 2019. We're proposing to host open houses prior to each of the public hearings. So there would be an open house the evening of the public hearing before the Planning Commission, where folks can review the final draft proposal and then be there to attend to submit any public testimony they would like. Once the Planning Commission has made their recommendation on the draft proposal, that will be forwarded to the board, where we'll hold a second public hearing on the proposed changes. Again, another open house prior to that public hearing, and looking for formal adoption of the final recommendation in March of 2020. So it will span into this next year, but it is definitely an ambitious schedule, so I will caveat this, you know, in our initial outreach, if we find that there may be more time needed to develop this, it may shift the schedule slightly, but we're trying to, as much as we can, based on budget funding, get as far along in the process and development of this project by the end of 2019 into 2020. So that's very quick. I recognize that going into this is a lot of detail, but that's generally the outreach process that we've defined and in the process for this project. It is initially a little more intensive in terms of public outreach, and that is really to inform the development and allow the community to help shape and guide changes that might be recommended as part of this project. Dave, Dave and Jeff, I don't know if you have anything you'd like to add to this, but I'd be happy to.
The only thing I wanted to add is that from the Planning Commission, we are making a more substantial ask of your engagement early on in the process before we go into the more traditional formal public process.
Just a couple of thoughts. One of the things that I've had people express frustration about is that by the time items get to the Planning Commission, there's been, you know, numerous stakeholder meetings, and basically the department and the stakeholders have a product, and here it is public. And yeah, you can work on the edges, but this is what we're going to do. But since I have what you're laying out here is a much different process, that we're not going to be doing the stakeholders, let's figure this out and then tell everybody what it's going to be. Would that be a fair?
I think that is very fair to say. We've tried to intentionally provide opportunity for the public to participate in this process in the formation of the draft, so that we're doing more of that engagement on the front end of the process versus once a draft is already developed. So yes, it is definitely a little different than how we've approached code development in the past.
Second question, if it's okay. Is in terms of focus, just want to make sure it's not just the footnotes, which would be great, but also as we're looking at rural industrial,
yes.
You know, some of the focus now we've actually developed through the comp plan process, or a real focus on forestry, on farming uses, and that sort of thing. Are those going to be on the table? Are we going to be able to look at those categories in terms of what should be allowed in the rural industrial, or so that'll be on the table?
Correct.
And the second part of it will be the process used to get approval. So instead of a conditional use permit, let's look at an administrative conditional use permit.
Correct. Okay. Yeah. An example of that in a rural area would be an custom arts and crafts use. Mm-hmm. An art gallery in a rural commercial zone requires a conditional use permit, which it's my understanding can take upwards of 6 months to process, and on the very high end, about $25,000. And so is that really, you know, number one, is that use intended to serve the surrounding neighborhood community and help to encourage tourism in the county? Yes, and so by removing barriers and reducing the level of permit review, it's an attempt to encourage economic development across the county.
I would add a couple more examples is that we have commercial zones in which no commercial use is outright permitted. They are all conditional. That's true in Keyport. It's true in Manchester. We recently had an example in Seebeck, for example, where a chiropractor wanted to locate in Seebeck in an existing facility. We couldn't allow that use in Seebeck because it's prohibited by the use table right now. And yet the specific purpose of that zoning is to provide services for the community members in that rural area. So, you know, Liz mentioned economic development. We very much see this as both rural and urban economic development. We see this as an opportunity to break down barriers to investment, especially in urban growth areas. We see this very much as a reasonable measure under the Growth Management Act to encourage development in urban areas and, you know, have the beneficial effects on rural areas as well.
Other questions?
The zoning use table, is anybody else using that in the state?
Use tables, yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Other okay. Other jurisdictions do have use tables.
So
across the country.
Almost
yes.
Everywhere,
yeah.
Here.
I know we've asked for examples in the past, and I'd really like to see some examples on this so that we can see something that's in place somewhere and compare it to what we're doing. And then just the list of examples that you've started mm-hmm. would be helpful, especially when people start to look at this, you know, on the public forum, so they understand, oh, this is how we do it right now. This is how we're proposing sure the average citizen out there looks and goes, a zoning use table,
yeah.
What, you know, we almost need a tutorial.
Yeah.
We recognize that in our outreach we need to plain talk it.
Okay.
Most people don't even know what a use table is.
Right.
Right.
Liz has already begun investigating some other jurisdictions in other parts of the country who have gone through similar updates to their use tables.
Okay.
Because trends change over time and methods of approaching things change over time. And while we have to put bounds on this, otherwise we're kind of opening up the whole thing and we'll have, you know, we're going way beyond our capacity to address it right now if we open up everything. So we have to put some bounds on it. But
yes.
Within those bounds, we're viewing this as very much a scoping process to think about,
okay.
You know, what do we want to do and how creative can we get. Liz mentioned the footnotes and that we have 100 footnotes. Right now our initial look at those is that between footnotes that are reserved, meaning they're no longer in use, and footnotes that we've identified that actually are not referenced in the use table, total up to about 20.
Mm-hmm.
So right out of the gate, we know we can eliminate 20 of those footnotes without any effort and having zero impact on anything.
Other questions?
I have a question relating to what your comment. And Jim, you might be able to help on this. The zoning use table changed dramatically in around 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to remember what it used to be. It was simpler. Mm. It didn't have all the footnotes before that. And I assume there's other formats that can be used that are easier to use and handle. But I just remember wrong.
Well, it's tough. We have you know, clients who come in and we're having to get administrative determinations or a director's determination or interpretations on conflicts within the footnotes.
Yeah.
You know, we want this setback, we want this setback, and they're different. And so we got to submit it to the department to say, well, which one is it? It's times. That's great.
Well, the tendency is for the uses to. And I've seen this in other jurisdictions, too. When I worked in Chicago, you think we have a law in the state, but you should look at the old Chicago.
Right. It
was very intimidating. So the tendency is when we encounter a situation where we have a use that's not identified at the table or it needs more clarity, the tendency is to split. And so they tend to grow over time. Some of the alternatives that Liz has been exploring. And if any of you have suggestions or experience with other versions, please let us know because we're completely open at this point. But some of the examples that Liz is looking at are more kind of clustering of uses and more categorical than they are specific. And that might be one that we seriously want to consider so we get away from that.
Well, I think what really... what's different were the number of footnotes
mm-hmm.
on the 2006 update.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, they appear substantive, but you can't cross-reference back unless you want to read every little square of her pages.
Mm-hmm.
And we
recognize that, having a round of new long-range staff brings a set of fresh eyes to this. To a certain extent, we recognized right away that a lot of those footnotes are not clarifying footnotes, clarifying what is in the use table. They are actually
mm-hmm.
stating requirements.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the footnotes are troublesome, but also just the embedding of design standard information in the table itself.
Yeah.
I mean, a use table is fine. Let it tell you what the uses are in the zone. But when you start going and you kind of creep in, and here's some setbacks for that, and here's the height
mm-hmm.
restrictions, and that stuff starts migrating into the table.
Mm-hmm.
That's when it just gets crazy. And so I commend the effort to tease out things that are actually supposed to be in a zoning use table
right.
and put the standards in text
yes.
where people can absorb them, go to them, and take them to staff without looking. Because as I age, all those little boxes just get smaller. Thank goodness for the screen where I can blow them up a little bit, but I definitely encourage the effort. The other thing I wanted to mention, I know that you said you were kind of staying away from rural residential, but one of the policy items that you know certainly the county is concerned with and the board is concerned with is housing and affordable housing. I heard dozens and dozens and dozens of ADU requests as conditional use permits everywhere except in the urban growth boundary. I pulled up the code, that's still the case. So as you and ask from this commissioner would be to think about that or at least put it on a punch list. There are also many other types of affordable housing solutions that are coming forward that certainly wouldn't be reflected in the use table today. So to think outside the box and see if we can come at what is a big county problem through this exercise.
ADUs are definitely under consideration. Whether they're part of this process or not still remains to be seen. Right now, we have had conversations with the tribes over that issue because that's an issue that the tribes have been concerned with. That also raises questions about growth projections in rural areas too, which we need to pay attention to. So,
rural densities.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it know that while it may or may not be a part of this update, that it's definitely on the radar.
Speaking of the ADUs, I'm trying to remember how many years ago it was when we had the last ADU significant update. I think Larry Keith was the director. And as I recall, the main mission of doing that was trying to get people in compliance. Because we know there's lots of people out there doing it, they're just not permitted, right? So has there been any study to look at, has there been any improvement? Has there been an uptick in permitting of ADUs? I know a lot of complaints after we went through the whole process were, well, why do I want to give away a year's worth of rental income when it's going to cost me $15,000 to go through the permitting and hire the consultant to do it? So the hell with the county, right? So I'd be curious to know, where we are.
I know Scott Diener has been looking at the trends in ADUs, and don't hold me to this, but my albeit vague recollection is that the trend is consistent, not necessarily increasing, but the scope through which we're looking at this is different. It's
right.
Not as much bringing people into compliance as it is a housing affordability issue in these days.
Yeah. And so how do you incent that type of product? So that's a whole different mission than bringing people into compliance.
Right. And if you were paying attention to the plethora of bills in the legislature related to growth management in this past session, there were a lot of them that related to ADUs and mandating of cities, counties, and or both different requirements for ADUs.
So simplification of the zone use tables. I'm assuming that implies that it reduces cost.
One would hope.
And cost. So there is a selling point here of, hey, if we can get this to work properly, then the cost of what used to be a conditional use permit is now reduced.
And we're trying to break down barriers where they're not really necessary.
Okay.
Part of this is the question: how do we remove barriers to development in urban growth areas where we want to see that economic investment going?
To the extent that you take anything from a conditional use permit to an ACUP, you've reduced the cost.
Yeah. If,
by definition,
and time,
if
yeah.
nothing,
and time.
It reduces the time, which is a big deal for a lot of people.
Right.
But at the same time, we also need to approach it recognizing that nobody wants to live next to a landfill. and if there are certain uses like we talked about earlier today that are touchy subjects, and we need to keep our communities livable too. So it's a balancing act.
Right.
And so you could think of this as a recalibration of that balance.
Okay.
And the simplification of ease of use is, I think, a big selling point to the community, and certainly well beyond the development community. Anyone who's ever tried to look up anything in this title will be very grateful, I think.
So,
okay.
So we would be grateful if any of you have any early ideas on this, or if you have examples of other approaches. To forward them to Liz.
I would also encourage, if Liz has ideas, to shoot them out to us, mm-hmm. as, you know, here's what you found,
sure.
you know, just so that we're aware of it and we come to the meetings
yeah.
somewhat prepared.
Might be sparked in your
right.
mind. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Okay, anything else on this?
That is all I have.
Thank you. Thank you very much. With that, we will move to our administrative update. It's going to be lengthy, I can tell.
Yeah. So some of you might have worked together before. My name is Jeff Remack. I'm the new director for the department. So I thought I would take the opportunity to come in, introduce myself. I know I was missing the last planning commission. I was out, and I'll actually be out again tomorrow on leave. But I am here today to entertain, say hi, and put a face to a name so that people know who I am. So I appreciate the work you guys do and taking the time to work with us as you do when it comes time to move code forward. So that said, tomorrow will be the annual meeting with the Board of County Commissioners, so just a reminder on that. If there's anybody who won't be able to attend, if you could please let Amanda know ahead of time, that would be appreciated.
Is that going to be in here or
in the conference room?
No, it'll be over in the Port Blakely room.
That'll be next door in Port Blakely, and there is another briefing ahead of us. We will be starting at 9:30, and the meeting with the Planning Commission and the Board will be part of the department's monthly update. So we'll have somewhere between 20 and 30 minutes to meet with the Board. So whoever is attending, if we could gather outside the room so we don't disturb the other meeting until they're done.
We should also be prepared to be here a few minutes early in case the earlier item wraps up more quickly than anticipated. I was going to get here about 9:15.
If I could say congratulations regarding your
situation. Yeah, welcome aboard.
May you be in that position a long time. My personal opinion is over the years.
Yeah, we've had a unique history over
here. I think overall the department does a lot better when you have structure and stability. And that means, you know, from the top, especially having a director, not having a turnover. And not to pick at Kitsap, because I think every jurisdiction has their turnover, but especially look in the cities and even neighborhoods right now. You know, it seems like directors last a year or two, and pretty soon they're either being fired or giving notice. So,
except in Clallam County, where they're elected.
Yeah, right.
So,
that's a good one.
That'll be good. I've been here about a decade so far, actually, just in DCD. So some of you have seen me when it comes to land use projects down below for stormwater review. I've also done been the building official for the past 2 years. So I've been doing the vertical construction as well. So we'll see if I end up ran off or.
Yeah, but now you got to
go.
Now
but I don't see it. I don't really see it happening.
Just the title of the job. Target.
Yeah. No. You'll be right up front as the taking the bullets when they come in. That's your job. So that's okay. I get a lot of that in the military as well. So it's a good experience.
Well, anytime you want to come and hang out with a bunch of land use guanks, Tuesday nights we have a seat open for you. So.
Appreciate it.
Quick procedural thing. Is there any way we could help the commission secretary with meeting minutes? I know for legal reasons, say, it's a balancing act, too, of what you have to include and not include. But I hate to have to see the clerk have to go, not verbatim transcripts, but having to sit. I don't know if she has to go back and listen to the tapes and do all that. But how much do we actually need? Have we had legal advice from the prosecuting attorney's office about the extent of where we are with meeting minutes? Thinking about in this discussion of simplification, we can lighten the load. It's my opinion.
So,
so obviously, most governing boards are a little bit different. You know, you could have a several-hour meeting, and meeting minutes can range from one page to 3 pages, and obviously, this has quasi-judicial and all sorts of other ramifications with it. And so, I just don't want it to be to the point four of your attorneys where it's almost where you have to do like court transcript
right.
style.
I have looked at that in the past. There's no statute. There's a statute that says all public meetings must have minutes.
Right.
That's it.
That's right.
And then if you look at things like Robert's Rules, you have to point out action items and motions. But you don't have to have, you know, who said what that wasn't, and, you know, every detail. So they are varied,
right,
depending on what I think the body wants. How much detail, and now that we have everything on electronic tape, it's really not necessary to have.
Amanda, do you want to join us for a minute?
I heard Amanda for a minute.
Talk about your philosophy on this.
How about just in hearings before the Growth Management Hearings Board and others, showing our work? You know, that we did have the public hearings. We I think for like tonight, we've got a motion. We approved the motion. You know, super. But site specifics, or we're dealing with comp plan amendments, where I think it's been important for the county to be able to say, look, we worked on this. There was public hearing. Look, here's the. I don't know, just in the appeals process from the county side, would that be helpful?
Yeah, but I think the findings of fact generally cover that, especially on your big comprehensive plan change. You know, you have a 50-page ordinance before you get to the attachments that talk about each one. And then you've got minutes, and you've got transcripts, because you can get the transcripts and file them with the board,
okay,
the growth board, if you need them.
Okay.
They're part of the record.
I do believe that some of the directions given on the minutes have come down from the Board of Commissioners, because they have in the past asked, well, how did you arrive at this?
Right.
So they're the ones, you know, kind of dictating. They want to know, well, what was the discussion about and stuff like that.
Well, and they also don't have the time to review the tapes or
right. Run it. I think you're right on that. I think they have some.
Yeah, because, you know, for our minutes, I think we all kind of look at it and go, yes, we all understand what that is. It's the commissioners are looking at it so that they can gleam out what the thinking was.
There's been lots of back and forth both ways. I was a planning commission secretary 12 years ago. At that point, it was almost verbatim, and it took even longer. And then we kind of shifted away, and it just depends. And you're right, Robert's Rules requires action items. But when I first came on 2 years ago, there was a push towards more detailed minutes so that, and I don't know that it came just from commissioners, but interest from others too, so that they could follow along what happened during the meeting without having to listen to the whole thing. So trying to add in, you know, some kind of balance, that I do summaries. Obviously, public hearings, I usually try and be a little bit more specific, because people come and speak and want to be heard, and so they deserve to have what they say, I think, pretty clearly documented. But we also have had several fairly heavy subjects in the past year or so, so that makes it kind of hard to summarize when it's so technical. I appreciate, actually, I just brought this up with Scott, you know, the other day, and we talked about maybe we should look at how much we want to shift what we're comfortable with, get guidance from commissioners upstairs, see what we're looking at. So it just kind of depends on what people want. So, but it's been lots of different variations on what we do and don't do and should do and are required to do.
As a former elected, I think the minutes are right-sized. I mean, for what I would want to access them for. But that being said, you're right. The thing that kills you is when you get the wireless ordinance and then, you know, the other, you know, tech-heavy thing, or, you know, something that draws an enormous number of constituents to come out and testify. So I would say rely on the board, you know, and see what their feedback is.
Yeah, and I should mention, I'm comfortable. I don't care if they're 30 pages. I'm going to read them. Just that way I've gone through all the documents. So it's whatever the staff's comfortable.
Anything
else for us? No. No.
Any questions for me? I mean, I'm the new face at the table. People may have
sort of new.
Have some questions for me. Yeah, sort of new.
Newish.
People have seen my name for years.
Oh, here's one. And I can't remember in all the years I've been doing it, if the Planning Commission or the interactions between, for example, the DCD and the, let's use concurrency as a good example, in planning and transportation. But what, where's the county right now as far as the interaction among the departments and the different governing boards and advisory boards with, for example, transportation impact fees? Which I hate to raise because I don't want to necessarily say, let's start talking about that. But Kitsap is the lowest in Washington State. And we have needs in Kitsap. So what kind of planning goes into that?
For DCD, realistically, when we look at it, the transportation impact fees, they do tie back to some of your comp plan actions when the time comes, but it's really driven a lot by Public Works in terms of the model that they use and the rationale. They did just update their traffic impact fees this year, as you guys are probably aware. They had some changes to the model that they were using because they were, what was it? They switched over from one methodology to another source is really what they switched to. And they eliminated some of the ones that used to be there, some of the uses that you would see for when it came for traffic generation, changed or were grouped together in the change that came. So we saw some that the fee went up, and granted, we're still the lowest, most anywhere you're going to find. So there's not really anyone who has challenged that. But there are some that went up, and then there are others that dropped lower. So really finding that tie into when we move forward is what we've kind of spoken with them about. Why did you choose to make this decision? Where are we at? How does it play out in terms of land use and traffic generation for the projects that we work on when it comes time for development?
I've always gotten the feel that there's the planning department and then there's Public Works. And the two don't always
so
seen eye to eye.
It kind of depends on really what you're looking at when it comes to it. If it comes to road improvement or road construction, there is a difference in what Public Works would like to see versus what the code calls out you must do. So there's allowances that are given to developers as to, I don't want to make it a public road, so it's going to be a private road. So then I have the minimum standards that are outlined in 17, and I'm going to have sidewalk on one side of the road, and this is my approach, and I don't want to do the frontage improvements, and so there's that back and forth conversation that comes about the associated frontage improvements. We've been pretty resolute in presenting a unified front, though. Frontage improvements are required. You need to meet the minimum, at least when you hit the right-of-way. It's going to meet the Kitsap County Road Standards design. And the conversations come out of that is, do we come up with private road standards? But we were waiting for our regular road standards to be updated, which are still under review, and haven't officially been adopted. So it's been a bit of a that aspect of it. In terms of relation to Public Works, there is some back and forth because we try to make sure that we're hitting this specificity that they need out of their road standard. When it comes to other items out of it in terms of general use of the right-of-way, we actually work pretty well together when we're at. If there's going to be a right-of-way opening, what the allowances are, what we want to do. Department of Development Services and Engineering is paid for by Public Works. Their purpose is to go ahead and work on Public Works' behalf for stormwater mitigation, right-of-way openings, things of that nature. It's been way more efficient having them in-house with DCD than when we were separated. It used to be that they were under Public Works. It's not that we've never looked at the model of what if they were to separate again, but we've seen more efficiencies from them being housed together and not shooting emails back and forth across the road and being able to talk to each other or working, you know, one stall away or one cubicle away from the planner in terms of laying it out. So we work very well on some things, and there are other things, obviously, that everyone has their own little thing they would like to see. So that's always a balancing opportunity for us.
Well, the whole impact fee question, though, is a kind of a higher-level policy question, you know, especially where it comes to transportation. I don't know that that's something – I've seen it go both ways, where they would solicit the input from the Planning Commission on it, because it's sort of halfway it's sort of a land use issue, but it's sort of not. And, you know, it's a finance issue on the one hand. So I don't know what kind of, input would be sought from the Planning Commission. But having, as a Planning Commissioner, sat through some of those, the City of Redmond did solicit that input from the Planning Commission and, you know, found that that was helpful to try to right-size those fees. You know, I'm looking down the road at a new fast ferry into downtown coming online for Port Orchard in the near term, I hope.
But with that brings traffic and, you know, additional usage and higher impacts to all of our infrastructure. So it'd be nice to be able to get out ahead of that on a policy basis.
One of the things when we look at that also is the alignment of the land use associated with the traffic generation use table. They don't always line up like for like. So it is, which is the closest. Hence, there were some of the uses that were eliminated. Is a balancing act when we look at it. It'd be hard to do both at the exact same time, just as we're looking at the use table now. If we were to try and align the traffic trip generation use table with ours, that would be quite the lift. But that would be something, if we were going to do that, it would definitely need to go before the Planning Commission, because there'd be big input on it. At the same time, you're going to have pushback from Public Works, like, well, these are what we need for our impacts to maintain our roads. And yes, you have Dog Farm, but that doesn't pop up on trip generation. I don't know what, you know.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's in part a question of how do you solve a problem. You know, we need to pay for public facilities, we need to pay for schools, we need to pay for roads and sidewalks and things like that. And there are different ways to approach it. When you know, I'm originally from the Midwest, and my experience working there on the private sector building side is that when you build when you do a development, the assumption is that the roads will revert to the jurisdiction. It's an outright assumption, and having a private road is actually an unusual thing. But the impact fees are really high compared to what we have here. But there's also differences in the way school level levies are handled and everything else too, because those impact fees are paying for a lot of different things. You know, to your comment about, you know, kind of the silo between Public Works and DCD, I guess my response to that is yeah, there's a bit of a silo wall there, but it's about as thin as I've seen, honestly, compared to other jurisdictions that I'm familiar with. You know, we collaborate with Public Works on a lot of projects. So it's, you know, I penetrating that silo wall is pretty easy to break through.
And it does help that they have projects to bring to us as well for review. So they want to have that good working relationship where we're at. So when we speak about something that's affecting the citizens, they understand.
Two tangible examples of where that silo wall is thin is right now, if you go up to Golf Club Hill Road, Creek right now, there's a project going in where we're pulling out a fish barrier, building a nice long bridge over the creek right now. That's a collaboration between DCD and Public Works. The work at the Harper Estuary is a collaboration between DCD Parks and Public Works. So we have three agencies all working together on a common project.
The wall is way less significant than it used to be. In years past, I can attest to that.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for the update, and we look forward to working with you.
Nice to meet you guys.
All right. With that, we come to for the good of the order. Does anyone else have anything for the good of the order?
So are we not meeting on the 4th of June?
We have concluded our service, and we need not meet on the 4th.
Not forever.
Right.
for the near term. So, Amanda, when is our next meeting?
Well, if that's the case, this may be my last meeting. I haven't turned in a formal yet, but I was thinking the end of June. Maybe the shortest-lived planning commission there has been.
Well, we're going to miss you. We were looking forward to a nice long service and your huge wealth of experience as a land use attorney. So, oh my goodness.
Yeah. Moving on.
We were really hoping to have you around for our Title 21 update.
You're going to miss the use tables.
The lug po, as we, yeah, I'm going to miss. Originally, the land use procedures development ordinance. No, land use development and procedures, LUDPO.
You're not leaving because of the land use table, I
hope. Yeah,
land use table? I gotta go.
I'm moving out of county.
I'm been there, done that. County, so I don't think I qualify any longer once I actually move, but that's gonna be gradual, I hope.
Well, as long as you're around, come on down.
Okay.
Chase you down.
3 minutes only.
All right. Well, with that, we will adjourn.